Section 4.1. The Sixth Patriarch's Discourse. The practice of Chan essentially involves cultivation and realization. To emancipate from the afflictions and sufferings induced by the delusiveness of life, we need to engage in cultivation for the realization of enlightenment and Buddhahood. Just as the Buddha had revealed various methods on cultivation for realization, the rich content of the Platform Sutra also involves methods of cultivation for realization. I would like to talk about the cultivation and realization aspects of Chan practice with reference to the Platform Sutra under the following four headings. 1. Without knowing the original mind, it is of no benefit to learn the Dharma. 2. All phenomena are not apart from intrinsic nature. 3. Through verbal utterance and cultivation of mind, practice for deliverance of oneself and others. 4. Perfection of Bodhi, the return to non-attainment. The first three are with reference to cultivation. The fourth pertains to realization. 1. Without knowing the original mind, it is of no benefit to learn the Dharma. What is the motivation behind Chan cultivation? In fact, the aim and only objective of Chan cultivation is to know your original mind, see your original nature. It says in the second fascicle of the Platform Sutra on Prajna, "Good Dharma friends, people of this world always have the word Prajna on their lips, yet they do not know Prajna. This is like people who will never fill up their stomach by just talking about food. If you only talk about emptiness but do not know the prajna inherent in your intrinsic nature, there is no benefit whatsoever." This clearly denotes the importance of the dictum, "Know your original mind, see your original nature," as the primary aim of cultivation for accomplishment. Anyone who talks about being in cultivation and yet does not know the original mind and original nature is only a blind practitioner whose emancipation is uncertain. From the perspective of Buddhist teachings, let us remember that the entire Buddhist discourse is revolved around the two states of mind, delusion and enlightenment. The fact that we are vagrantly roaming within the six paths of transmigration in the cycle of births and deaths is because we do not know our original mind. Hence, constantly, we are in a state of delusion. What is the original mind? In relative terms, we talk about the true mind and the deluded mind. And the aim of cultivation is to dispel delusion to know the truth. What then is the relationship between the true mind and the deluded mind. I can definitively say that truth and delusion are one, not two. Truth and delusion are of the same source. That is why we often heard of sayings such as affliction is Bodhi, or living and dying is Nirvana. The key to understanding these statements is to know that without affliction, there is no Bodhi. Without living and dying, Nirvana could not be found. The two sides of the equation are not two. They are not external to one another. Another example in point is within this world, worldliness, and beyond this world, transcendence. They are not referring to two worlds in parallel, but spoken in the context of only one world. We have made the separation because of our discriminatory mind. In the absence of discrimination, a mind that is awakened at every moment and totally at one's own disposal would well know that affliction is Bodhi, living and dying is Nirvana, and not discriminate between worldliness and transcendence. In the same way, truth and delusion are also two sides of the same coin. Apart from truth, there is no delusion, and vice versa. Truth and delusion are not two. We might then ask, why do we have to cultivate for realization of the true mind if true mind and deluded mind are not two? Please note that it is in respect of essence and accomplishment that we say truth and delusion are not two. Before reaching the stage of accomplishment or realization of the wisdom of non-discrimination, sentient beings only know the sphere of dualism. In other words, having lost our true nature, we worldlings are often in a state of ignorance, in constant pursuit of delusion, running after the deluded mind in the vicissitudes of time, not knowing the way to restore the true mind. It is for this reason that we must engage in cultivation to clear out the mist and cloud in order to see the azure sky and dispel the deluded mind to witness the true mind. Once we have reached the state of true mind and take sanctuary there, both the deluded mind and true mind will be gone for good. This is when the true and deluded are one, not two. This is why the sixth patriarch repeatedly told us that the true mind is within the deluded mind, and that it is impossible to find the true mind apart from the deluded mind. The vital point is to be able to reflect on the nature of emptiness when the deluded mind arises, and the deluded mind there and then becomes the true mind. It is succinctly pointed out in the commentary on the arising of faith in the Mahayana that one mind breeds two doors. The two doors referring to the door to the mind of true suchness and the door to the mind of arising and cessation. The door to the mind of true suchness refers to the true mind, while the door to the mind of arising and cessation refers to the deluded mind. The deluded mind is subject to arising and cessation. The true mind neither arises nor perishes. The true mind is the essence of purity. The deluded mind is the function of defilements. If we are able to purify the mind for ourselves, to awaken to our own mind and master it, having purged the mind of arising and cessation, the true mind that would neither arise nor perish, that is, the awakened mind that can be master of itself, would manifest. We practice Chan for a state of perfect accomplishment that is neither more nor less. To put it in another way, we have to equate living and dying with nirvana. It is not satisfactory to harbor the concepts of both living and dying and nirvana, for they are still two and dichotomous. Yet, not two does not mean there is still a one. Not two is when even one does not exist. Furthermore, it is still not perfect when there are notions of one and not one. The only way to reach the state of non-duality, the only way to see the true mind and intrinsic nature, is to seize the moment here and now and sit it out to sever from the three expanses of time. To sit it out to sever from the three expanses of time is meant by settling peacefully in the moment without discrimination. The three expanses of time refer to the past, present, and future. If we care to look at what we are mindful of right now, it is not difficult to find that our mind is thinking about something in either the past, present, or future. Sometimes we are not even sure what we are thinking or where our mind is. This is the state of being lost in life. If only we could allow our mindfulness to stay focused on one object of the mind without being distracted by desultory thoughts and wanton desires, or attached to the notions of past, present, and future, then that very instant is being severed from the three expanses of time. Once severed from the three expanses of time, our mind will not be deluded or lost. It will instead settle peacefully within the moment, solitary yet lucidly luminous. It is then only a matter of time before one would be enlightened and able to witness one's original nature. Sitting it out to sever from the three expanses of time is nothing mystical, and a practitioner seeking enlightenment could potentially be able to experience it any time within everyday living. Whether your cultivation is through mindfulness of the Buddha, mantra chanting, or any other form of practice, being severed from the three expanses of time could be experienced if the practitioner is able to focus on the moment with acute awareness at every instant of mind. If not in this way, historical patriarchs and sagacious practitioners would not have found enlightenment at the sound of a piece of stone hitting against a bamboo. Similar examples of being enlightened are when crossing the bridge and noticing one's reflection in the river, upon hearing the slamming of a cleaver on the chopping board, and the butcher being asked, which is the best cut? Which is the fat cut? Such cases are possible if the person concerned is constantly mindful of finding enlightenment, hence totally absorbed in cultivation at every moment in daily living, never missing an instant or departing from mindfulness in the here and now. This is no easy practice, for every instant is in constant flux. The here and now is not stationary. As we are aware of this instant, it is already the next. It is not something that can be objectified. Before one could even establish the subject-object link, the instant of direct lucid awareness is already gone. To be able to settle peacefully into every instant of mindfulness implies a focused mind of no abidance and no self. This is the real attainment of cultivation. Those who are mindful of Amitabha Buddha and recite the Buddha's name, being able to settle peacefully in the moment of mindfulness, thinking neither of the West, the East, nor even oneself and the Buddha, maintaining awareness of the sound of the Buddha's name with clarity down to the syllable, would have transcended time and be in consonance with Amitabha. This is in effect severance from the three expanses of time. The name Amitabha has the meaning of infinite light and infinite life. Infinite light is beyond space, and infinite life is beyond time. To be in consonance with Amitabha is to be mindful at every instant in the here and now, neither thinking of the past and future, nor abiding in the present. In other words, every instant of mindfulness is non-discriminating and at one with the Buddha. Therefore, the prerequisite to find enlightenment is to seize the moment and sit it out to sever from the three expanses of time. Cultivational practice is for attaining enlightenment and seizing each moment of the here and now is imperative.